We're going to go on to our second speaker, and that is Mark Mahaney. Mark Mahaney, he's a senior managing director at Evercore, and he's also the head of internet research. Mark is a five-time number one ranked institutional investor in the internet equity analyst space. We met Mark previously on What Happens Next when he discussed various internet stocks such as Amazon and Spotify. I've asked Mark to join us again because he's publishing a new book to be released November 9th entitled Nothing But Net, about how to invest in tech and growth stocks.
All right, Larry. Thank you very much for having me on, and it's nice to reconnect. I really wanted to talk about Nothing But Net. That's a book I've got coming out November 9th, already available for pre-order at your favorite online bookstores. What led me to write this book is that I've seen a mistake made over and over again, is the impetus to trade rather than to invest in high-quality tech stocks. I tried to put together 10 lessons from both the big wins and the big losses in the consumer internet space. Have there been big wins? Absolutely. Facebook's up over 600% since its IPO. Google's up over 3,000%. Netflix up over 45,000% since its IPO. And wait for it, Amazon's up over 160,000% since its IPO. So there have been some phenomenal wins in here, some phenomenal successes, but there have also been some phenomenal blow-ups. Zulily or Blue Apron or names that are even better known, Groupon. But you could also look at the kind of the failed opportunity of eBay, Yahoo, and even AOL Time Warner. I think there are lessons from both of the successes and the failures in the group. I'm the oldest and longest lasting internet analyst on the street. And so with plenty of mistakes along the way, if you're picking stocks, it's an odds business. You're going to make plenty of mistakes. You're going to try to learn from those too. So I go through these 10 lessons in the book. First is, if you look at it from a long-term perspective over the last 5, 10, even 20 years, we've been in a very consistent bull market, especially since 2008, 2009. I want to start off with the warnings, which is that there will be blood or you can lose a lot of money when you pick the bad stock. In the book, I go through the examples of Blue Apron and Groupon. Groupon's down about 93% since its IPO, but I do try to remind people, Groupon at the time of its IPO way back in 2011 was a guaranteed sure thing. All that's in quotes. This was a company that had rebuffed a $6 billion offer from Google, had a business model that was so innovative there were hundreds of copycat imitators, and was the fastest company to reach a billion revenue run rate in history. Like, wow, what could go wrong? Well, a lot of things went wrong, and there are lessons in there, particularly in terms of the quality of the management team. I think that was really the big Achilles heel. And lesson number two, even if you get the best companies, even if you pick the best stocks, you can still lose money from time to time. Even the best-in-class stocks aren't immune from major sell-offs. The companies that I think are just phenomenal outperformers, and that objectively have been over the last 2, 5, 10 years, the FANG stocks, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Google, they've all suffered corrections that have ranged from 20 to 44%. Like, either that's because of massive sell-off in NASDAQ at the end of 2018, or for company missteps. I always refer to the Facebook faceplant, when in the middle of 2018, in the wake of the Cambridge Analytica scandal, you had a 43% correction in Facebook stock because Facebook reacted aggressively to that scandal by massively increasing its operating expense spend and warning the street about material revenue deceleration. This lesson is even the best can suck at times. That's a third is don't play quarters. Stay focused on the long term and ignore short-term stock price fluctuations. I think they're so hard to do. It's almost a fool's errand because you got to match fundamentals and expectations, and it's a very hard combo to get right. Invest in the high-quality assets. Lesson number four, revenue matters more than anything. I've become a very die-in-the-wool fundamentalists when I think about tech stocks and growth stocks. I have found that the stocks follow fundamentals. When it comes to growth and high-tech stocks, that matter the most are revenue. I love this example of Netflix. Over the course of the decade, 2010 to 2019, Netflix as a stock was the single best-performing S&P 500 stock over that time period, up almost 2,000%. Yet free cash flow, what happened to it? It deteriorated deteriorated dramatically. The free cash flow burn went from like $20 million loss in 2013 to over $3 billion in 2019. Free cash flow burn continued to worsen each and every year. There was a massive disconnect between the stock and the free cash flow. Where was the connect? The connect was with the revenue growth. The company was able to sustain pretty much 30% streaming revenue growth for almost a decade. That's what the market bid up, and the company was also was able to accelerate its net subscriber additions almost every single year. Yes, of course, earnings matter, but the leading indicators, revenue growth and sub ads, and especially if you can find these companies that can do these wonderful things like maintain 20% revenue growth, it's one of the markers I look for high-quality names. And I'm talking about doing that from scale, from a couple of billion in revenue. It's a very hard thing to do. I think only about 2% of the S&P 500 is able to consistently do that. I also look for companies that have got what I call GCIs, growth curve initiatives, things that companies, and I'll stick with the Netflix example, at the beginning of 2018, revenue growth materially accelerated because they expanded into the Asian markets, because they successfully implemented a dollar price increase, and because they rolled out local original content in the U.S. It was shows like 13 Reasons Why. Overseas, they've had different shows like Casa de Papel, which we all know is Money Heist. So I definitely look for growth curve initiatives that can get me to that, that 20% revenue growth. Listen, number four, it don't mean a thing if it ain't got a that product swing. You know, you really want to focus on companies that have been successful at product innovations. I mean, companies that have the ability to generate numerous successful product innovations. There's usually something in water there, either the management team or the corporate structure. I know when it comes to investing, past performance is no guarantee of future performance, but I don't think that's necessarily true when it comes to management teams and product innovation. Amazon is the wonderful poster child for this point. Here's a company that showed the ability to innovate in at least three dramatically different areas, online retail, cloud computing, and in devices with the Kindle. When you see a company that can do that, and that evidence was clear by about 2007, 2008, there was plenty of investment gains to be made after that and plenty more innovations that came after that. So focus on companies that have got this great product innovation. Lesson number six was the importance of TAMs. So with TAMs, the bigger, the better. They matter. They can be expanded. They help drive growth. They can lead to scale, and scale wins. And what I particularly like to see are companies with small market shares of large TAMs. I know it sounds simple, but that's what you're looking for. Google, the fact that Google was able to sustain 20% revenue growth for a decade after hitting a $25 billion revenue run rate, a feat that only two other companies in history have ever been able to achieve. The fact that they were able to do that is precisely because for a good chunk of that period, they were a single-digit percentage share owner of a trillion-dollar TAM, a TTAM, as I call it, an end market, internet, global advertising that's in excess of $1 trillion. So look for that low penetration, big TAMs stories. That's what you want to look for. Lesson number seven is following value prop, not the money. It's companies with compelling customer value props that beat the companies with the great business models. Another way to think about this is look to invest in customer-centric ones as opposed to investor-centric ones. Amazon versus eBay, one company that focused on customers, the other focused on investors. eBay used to have the major market cap advantage. It was 6x the market cap of Amazon as late as 2006. But that all changed because Amazon had a much better consumer value prop when it came to price, selection, and convenience. And its market cap now is 50x that of eBay's. There's also the example of Grubhub and DoorDash. The first company had the great investor-centric model. The second one had the great consumer-centric model. The latter one now is worth dramatically more than the first one was taken out for. Lesson number eight, management matters an enormous amount. You get the management team, and you'll likely get the stock right. I go through a series of case studies in the book to try to cull out a couple of the things we're really looking for as signs of a really good management team. If you work backwards and you look at the largest tech companies in the world, almost all of them are founder-led. So I definitely have a bias towards founder-led companies, companies with long-term orientation, great industry vision. And I also throw in here the point about the cost to be forthright with employees and investors about mistakes and challenges. I'm a big fan of Uber. I think that's kind of one of the next stocks, major tech stocks, could get a lot bigger. Like I still think that can go up something like 10x in market cap, you know, over a 5 to 10 year period, which is a huge increase. And one of the reasons is I've got a fair amount of confidence in the CEO. Now, he's not the founder, so ding the stock for that. But he's got a very good track record with me in terms of being very upfront when Expedia, during the great financial crisis, Dara Khosrowshahi was the first and just about the only tech exec I came across who was willing to say that. I think his literal expression was, it's a dog's breakfast out there. I remember that because I put it in the title of an earnings note. And when Dara, a decade later, became the CEO of Uber, I called that up and I said, here's a person who was willing to be right up forthright about when times are tough. This is the kind of person you want running a business, because times did get tough for Uber. It turned out just a year and a half later with COVID. And then I'll just finish up with two other points that I detail in the book, how to handle valuation of high-growth, high-tech stocks. Sometimes it's pretty simple when you get robust earnings like Facebook does, and then there's a debate over whether it should be 18 or 20 or 25 times earnings, but people can reasonably argue over that. In the case of Netflix, you could even argue at 70 times earnings. Netflix was an attractively valued stock because for a five-year period, the earnings growth there came closer to 90% year over year. But then I go through the really tough edge cases. So what do you do when companies have no earnings? You know, in Techland, you're going to come across these examples a lot. There's a good number of the new, for example, NASDAQ listings that are profitless companies. They go through and use this as a screen to decide whether a valuation argument can actually be made. One, are there public companies with similar business models that are already profitable? Two, if the company as a whole isn't profitable, are there segments within the business that are? Three, is there a reason why scale can't drive a business to profitability? And four, are there concrete steps that management can take to drive the company to profitability? If you have an unprofitable public company, but that can, you can answer yes comfortably to two or three of those questions, you can probably make the valuation argument. And then finally, the last lesson, it is to hunt for DHQs. Not DQ, that's Dairy Queen. DHQs, dislocated high-quality companies. So what I've tried to do is summarize in the book through these different chapters what are high-quality companies that have this premium revenue growth, that 20% revenue growth tick, companies that have large TAMs, relentless and successful product innovation, compelling customer value props, and great management. And then buying them when they're dislocated, that allows you to minimize valuation risk. So what's a dislocated stock? One that's traded off 20 to 30%, or stocks that are trading at a discount to their growth rates. And what I found in this, in the last 25 years of covering these companies, that dislocation happens to the best stocks. Those FANG stocks, they've all had their fair share of dislocations. I've not yet seen a high-quality company that didn't dislocate at least once in a year and a half period. So if you can identify the high-quality companies and be patient, those dislocation opportunities will come. Take advantage of them. That's the single biggest takeaway from the book, DHQs, Hunt for Dislocated High-Quality Companies. That's it. That's the book. Nothing but net 10 timeless stock-picking lessons from one of Wall Street's top tech analysts.
My first question.